mother, oh, and your father. Like it if I stay here too long. One kiss and talk, and I'll be going. You know I hate to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and time now for the next hour, our public affairs show here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's right. Coming up next, the new WHFR Journal for Friday, September 26, 2008. We'll just call that a pregnant pause there. Bill, our big band man, who was just leaving, he left his cell phone by the console, so I had to run out and give it to him before he got out in his car and was tooling away. So, public service, that's what we're doing here. The new WHFR Journal, local news and views. Welcome to the edition for Friday, September 26th, a significantly historic week in America. You already know that it's the worst economic crisis ever, even bigger than what started the Great Depression back in 1929. Let's see, today, I guess, the latest, and if you're listening to this from WHFR.FM as a podcast sometime later in the week, some of this will be redundant, but they do expect that whatever the bailout package is that Congress approves, however long they take to do that, and I'm hoping they'll take a little while longer, because everything I've heard so far, even the modifications to the unrestricted use of $700 billion by Henry Paulson himself, that pays for a nice vacation spa or buy a couple countries that you can move your family to. That was crazy. I think I said that last Friday. And of course, Congress has come up with a couple of ideas to, let's cap those CEO salaries. Oh, yeah, right. How are you going to do that? My question is, how do you enforce that? What do you say? Nobody gets an increase? I mean, how do you do that with private companies? How can you? That's ridiculous. Sure, they're making too much money. Yes, they have all their golden parachutes, but that's up to the companies, the individual companies. And if they go broke because of stupid, overpaid leaders, so-called, that drives them into bankruptcy, they should make sure those leaders don't get a dime. There should be a way that those companies police themselves so that leaders that make bad decisions don't get a penny. Oh, well. So, nonetheless, today, we want to look at the present situation as best possible and how it relates to Dearborn, because our show, the new WHFR Journal, deals with local news and views. It's just that the big-time views do affect everybody. For example, 2 weeks ago, I mentioned thank you for the AIG bailout, because half of my retirement money is in AIG annuities. They bought out Valic, who was a wonderful, stable, small company years ago and wouldn't invest in crazy things. But AIG, which is, by the way, based in, I think their headquarters are in Hong Kong. It's like Lehman Brothers. They're in England. You know, so we're bailing out, saving companies that don't even have their home base here. Why not? Oh, they pay too many taxes if they were based in the U.S. Yeah, I love these multinationals that get bailed out, and they don't even have a home base, home headquarters, don't even pay U.S. taxes. Maybe AIG pays a little, but that bailout to AIG, remember, was actually one where there were strings attached, where the government may get paid back. The trouble is the government will wind up, of course, controlling almost all the major banks. And that's, well, what do you want to call it, socialism? I just think that's bad. You know, can you really trust the government to do good stuff efficiently? Well, I think the answer is no. I mean, even most Democrats would say that. You know, that's why there's regulation. But if they already own everything, why would they regulate themselves? You know, we can't trust that. You know, I'd rather have private companies regulated where appropriate by the federal government. And when appropriate. Well, you have to decide those things for yourself. I'm going to try to give you a couple ideas here. I had to do something about the outrage, to express the outrage that all of us feel, even if we don't understand what's going on. And Jim Hightower of the Hightower Report, a newsletter he publishes at jimhightower.com, probably the easiest to understand progressive in this country, populist, true populist. He's got some words that we can't use on the radio in his current audio statement for today, and so I can't do that. Ralph Nader was on Democracy Now! Yesterday's episode for about 20 minutes in the first 30 minutes of the show, and you can download that from democracynow.org as an MP3 file. You know, WDET does replay, it's really a replay, delayed replay, of Democracy Now! Monday through Fridays from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. at night. But if you can't wait for that, since it's live from 9 to 10 every morning, Monday through Friday, it's available as a podcast from their website to download and listen for that day or any previous day, too, after 10 a.m. So that's available even right now, and I'll just recommend that to you to listen to what Ralph Nader said. Because remember, again, it's democracynow.org, and it's their show from yesterday, September 25th, okay, 2008. I'm not sure what their show today says, but you don't have to wait for WDET to play that show. You can download it. You can listen to it yourself for free anytime after 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. And very, very good news that isn't usually covered, kind of alternative like WHFR. I do commend WDET for using it, but I think they should bump NPR from 9 to 10 in the morning, and or even Craig Folly should wait another hour, although I always start listening to Detroit Today, his show, from 10 to noon at 10 a.m. every morning, and I like that. But we should get Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Fed live right here in Detroit, 9 to 10 a.m. That's what I'd like them to do if they really want to be helpful and useful. But you can get it anytime, and I highly recommend that. Remember, the only two candidates for president who saw this coming and talked about it in the primary campaigns, and one of them is still a presidential candidate who will be on the ballot in Michigan this fall. The only two that got it right, that saw this coming, even though major news media didn't do it, and the Republicans saying, there's no crisis. I remember good old Fred, what's his name, when he jumped in the race and he came to the first Republican presidential mini debate here in Dearborn, Fred Thompson, former Senator Fred Thompson. Guess you're always a senator because you always get your, you know, retirement money even after one term. Anyway, Senator Fred Thompson, There's no economic crisis in this country. We're doing fine. And John McCain echoed that but he was the most blatant that there's no crisis. Well, the only people that said there is a crisis, there is a storm brewing, and it's really big, and we got to do something then, much less now, was Ron Paul. And he got it right, and he's been getting it right for years. He's a baby doctor by trade, but he really has read up and studied on the economy. And is anybody asking Ron Paul what to do about this bailout? In Congress, he said, nope, none of the major leaders are talking to him. Why? Because he told them so. That's why. You hate to deal with a I told you so person, don't you? They're right. They were right. Darn them. We're not going to give them any respect now for being right then and maybe knowing what to do to get us out of this. And Ralph Nader. Now, of course, Ralph Nader and Ron Paul have different perspectives on what to do. First of all, to have avoided this crisis, but to get us out of it, they probably differ too. But nonetheless, they got answers. They got programs. They got specifics that I have not heard on the major media anywhere. And you have to go to their websites and you have to, you know, dig it up yourself. And why don't our congressmen listen to the people who said it was coming and find out their suggestions for the best way out? If they're so smart to know it was coming, maybe they're smart enough to know the appropriate ways to get out of this. But no, you don't want to deal with that. Ralph Nader is Mr. Spoiler, just because he's a know-it-all. Gee. Remember, I think I said I conclude a couple weeks ago, I'm going to vote for the smartest people. I'm going to vote for people smarter than myself who have much more experience and who are right most of the time about the economy, which is the basic thing that keeps it all going, folks. And to do good things for everybody. You know, I am some of a populist. I believe that reward should come to those that work hard, not just the rich that automatically fall into it. And I think health insurance for all, single payer, universal health care, is the first step. It would save us so much money. Want to save money? We need universal health care in this country because the health care system is costing the lower classes, especially, as well as businesses, too much money. It can't survive this way, and our country was going broke anyway because of that. And the only answer is something that is government regulated, and boy, you got to be careful whenever you suggest things like that. But that has to happen, and so let's as a few even conservative Republicans, this was on the Glenn Beck CNN headline news show last night and a couple nights ago too, as well as Lou Dobbs. We need trickle up. And Rachel Maddow on CNBC or MSNBC, she's the new talk show host after Keith Olbermann, and that's considered sort of a liberal news and opinion station. But even she, a lot of agreement here. Trickle up, not trickle down. Let's help the people on the bottom to keep the whole system going. And I found out something that I read somewhere today about how people who can't pay their mortgage, they finally just get up and leave. And they don't declare bankruptcy because mortgage foreclosures are not part of bankruptcy law. They've been written out. And so you have no choice. Because, you see, if you have debts and you declare bankruptcy, they work out a payment system. They work out a way to pay the people you owed money to some money. With a foreclosure, you just leave. There's no money at all to pay for that mortgage, is there? And so one small thing that could be done that one of these smart people that I read that I've mentioned suggested is change the bankruptcy law very simply to include mortgage foreclosures so that the bank would deal with a mediator, a third party, maybe the government, and be able to get money. Why don't the banks consider refinancing? The reason why these people can't pay the mortgages all of a sudden, okay, maybe they lost their jobs, but most of them it's because their adjustable rate mortgages, or ARM, okay, their ARM has been cut off. No, their adjustable rate mortgage, the rate was raised so high. And why? Why does a bank need so much more profit? Because they want it, okay? Cost of doing business. Yeah, double. Triple, okay, people can't pay it. They foreclose. Bank loses everything. Well, banks get smart. Why don't you keep the rate or return the rate if they can't pay it back down to the rate they started with? In other words, make it a fixed rate mortgage. That'll make them feel stable and secure, make it a fixed rate at the rate they originally got, and be done with it. People can stay in their homes, and nobody loses a ton of money. The banks get all of their principal back, plus some interest, not as much as they'd like, but the investment's secure and the people are secure. So, you know, this is part of the trickle up. Do something about healthcare. And you say, well, that's too complicated to do now. We got a banking crisis. But, you know, it's all these economic things together. Even Dennis Kucinich. And you say, Dennis Kucinich, little Dennis Kucinich. Everybody makes jokes about him on television. He's got national plans. Why do you think he ran for president? He's got positions on these things. He's thought it through. He's not just playing around with little tweaking on the system, you know, little teeny improvements that cost us a ton of money here and there. That's what most of our representatives do to keep the people in their home district happy. Little tweaking, you know. Oh, they did a wonderful thing for seniors, for car owners. They did a little, you know. We've got systemic problems. Yeah, it's a disease. It's an epidemic here. We've got to make some significant changes, and maybe we can't do those right away, and we shouldn't. But even the bailout is crazy the way it was submitted to Congress by the president. Completely insane to give Henry Paulson, who was part of the problem, you know, in all the years of Goldman Sachs, which was one of the first investment firms to go belly up, who never saw this coming. Well, I don't want to sound like Rachel Maddow or other people. You've got that rage. So I just thought I would pass the rage along, not by myself, and excuse me for clearing my throat on the microphone here. Sorry, Mike. It's Jack Lessenberry for this week from Metro Times. So here we go, Jack Lessenberry. He quotes first John McCain, "The fundamentals of the economy are strong." And John said that September 16th, and today is the 26, only 10 days ago. "The fundamentals of the economy are strong." And Herbert Hoover, in October of 1931, said the economy is fundamentally sound before the big crash came. Well, Jack says, gotta love them Republicans. Herbert Hoover was Republican. "They're good for a million laughs, at least if you have a few million bucks. Unfortunately, both parties are pretty much a bad joke these days as we slide into the abyss. Here's the truth. Our economy is teetering on the point of collapse. Nobody is telling you the full truth about that. Not the media, not the candidates for president." Excuse me, Jack, but, you know, Ralph Nader is a candidate for president, and he's been saying that. He goes on, though. "Frankly, I'm hesitant to say anything about it because I'm writing these words last Sunday night." So this is 6 days ago, folks, when he wrote this. And he says, "And by the time you read them, who knows what the situation will be?" Well, of course, we know it's no better. And as of this morning, Washington Mutual went bankrupt and luckily was bought by Bank of America. You know, I have a credit card with Washington Mutual. Yeah, no more. Anybody has money in Washington Mutual, basically, they were ready to go belly up and be bankrupt, but they didn't have to close anything or stop business. And, you know, all your deposits are insured by the federal government anyway. So it'd be business as usual there. But deeply in debt, they sold themselves, had to sell all their assets for a fraction of the value to, Bank of America? No, it's J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase in this case, I think. Okay, look it up, but whatever. All right, so things are getting worse, Jack. And he goes on and he says, "We do know this. Last week, that is a week ago this week, our economic system came perilously close to something like a meltdown. And that is no exaggeration," it says. "Economists agree that this is the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression." Okay. And which devastated this country and was ended only by World War II. During last week's market crash, we saw one major financial house collapse, Lehman Brothers, another being bought and taken over Merrill Lynch, and a third being bailed out for billions by the federal government, AIG. This was all just the tip of the time bomb, And despite McCain's mindless mumblings, everyone knew things were likely to get even worse. Oops, I've got to take an intercom here. Somebody's standing in the hallway. Hang on. Oh, good. Somebody got him at the door. Okay. Sometimes there's no one else here, except yours truly on Friday afternoons. You know, administrators have to go play golf and things. Okay. Hey, it's good weather. Okay, for the rich people. Okay. Sorry, had to toss that in. Remember, all the opinions expressed here, the ones I read and the ones I state, as flimsy as they may seem to you in terms of rationale, they are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anybody else. Okay, not necessarily. But they're intended also not to have you believe what I say or what Jack Lessenberry says, but they're intended to wake you up a little bit and do your own research. Okay. So, tip of the time bomb last week, says Jack. And then he goes on, Jack Lessenberry, Metro Times. Then he says, the most powerful economic figure in the nation, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, picked up the phone and called the second most powerful one, Henry Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury. Both are deeply conservative guys, and during that phone call, they decided to commit this nation to a form of socialism. And again, if Amy Goodman and Jack Lessenberry call it socialism, it definitely is, folks, because they're already considered by many people to be lefties, even though they might be right-handed. Who knows? You know. And Jack says, yes, you heard correctly. Socialism, not for you and me, comrades, but for reckless firms that lent money carelessly and for imprudent citizens who signed up for or got suckered into mortgages they couldn't afford. Our leaders decided the government should buy up and bail out all of America's bad mortgages and pass the burden, are we talking maybe $1 trillion or more here, on to us and future generations. What the Bush administration now wants is for Congress to give the Treasury Department the authority to buy $700 billion in bad and failed mortgage-related assets from financial institutions. We are rewarding reckless failure, in other words. A few old stalwarts who believe W's, that's our president, earlier crazy, I'll just use the word crazy here. It's not the word Jack Lessenberry uses. We can't say that on the air. Statements about free markets were even willing to recognize that he had betrayed them. Quote, U.S. Senator Jim Bunning, who's a Republican of Kentucky, remember when he was a pitcher for the Tigers? Yeah, Jim Bunning. I remember back in the early 60s. Oh, he's a hyper-conservative. Let me talk about that, okay? But even Jim Bunning said, the free market for all intents and purposes is dead in America. Whoa. Okay. And Jack Lessenberry says, yeah, well, he has a point. But if he keeps his old cap on, baseball cap, maybe it won't show. Ooh, pointy head. Oh, I get that, Jack. Thank you. The alternative was a new depression. Not that this has been avoided for sure. When the Great Depression began with the stock market crash of 1929, there were efforts made to stop it, to shore up the market by the government and major private investors. Some of the things they tried worked for a day or two, and then the slide continued. That doesn't mean a new depression is inevitable, though the long-term economic trends look very scary. However, what nobody is really talking about is this. Who will pay for this massive federal bailout of the collapsing mortgage industry? That's easy to answer, says Lessenberry. You. All of us. Folks, if I may add, you, that's who, he says. That is, if you are working or will be working, the average American is about to pay thousands of dollars to help bail out big investors who made very poor decisions. Thousands, and maybe much more. We've been spending without paying for many years. Imagine that you sent away for all the credit cards you are routinely offered in the mail. When they arrive, you start charging. When the bills come due, you borrow more to meet the minimum payment, until one day you can no longer get any more credit or meet your obligations. That day is arriving now. What this means is not only are taxes going to go up, one way or the other, but a new round of high inflation may be coming in a very few years. That's certain to be true if the Federal Reserve merely prints more money to cover up the assets it is sending into the economy. And as Ron Paul has said, okay, what that money is based on nothing. We went off the gold standard. okay? It's based on nothing. And internationally, our dollars, everybody knows that. The money is actually worth nothing except good faith. Good faith and credit. Yeah, well, if they lose faith in us, confidence in us, to be able to pay back our debts, we can't just get the printing presses going and roll off more dollars. Or instantly, in the computer, say that we've got $10 trillion in a bank account somewhere just by changing the account numbers. You know, we don't. And everybody knows that in the world. Why do you think they had the UN meeting this week? Not to let George Bush sound off in his farewell address as president. Yeah, don't we wish it would be sooner, maybe. No. It was to express the fact that they're all very concerned. Hey, if we go down, well, a few of them are going to go down too because they're heavily invested in us. But we're going to be hurt the worst. Yeah, that's the way that's going to go. So, So as he says here, questions ought to be asked about the bill that they're about to shove through Congress, authorizing the biggest bailout in history. And our congressmen, I think, are asking some of those questions. Not enough. They're not asking Ron Paul's questions. They're not asking Ralph Nader's questions. Or Glenn Beck's or Lou Dobbs. Okay, or Bill O'Reilly's questions. It's interesting for me to quote so many conservatives who seem to be the rational ones here, who don't agree with President Bush and Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke. And Jim Bunning, for that matter. Hey, I get to quote a former Detroit Tigers baseball player. Wow, on this show. In a favorable way, too. Not that Jim Bunning is an economic whiz. No, he's not. He's not a highly educated economist. Or does he know economic history? You know, but we can all jump into this. So let's ask those questions. Mark DeBias, an uncommonly smart lawyer in Marquette, Michigan, telegraphed me. Wow. Is that really a telegraph you got, Jack Lessenberry? It telegraphed me that the proposed bailout is like the prosecutor setting bail at the behest of a defendant who knows that the bail conditions will be violated. And the crime victim gets to put up the dough, meaning the poor taxpayer who is being raped again. Yes, says Lessenberry, questions ought to be asked, but probably won't be. You see, anyone who tries to slow down this rush to borrow is likely to be called every name, as the saying goes, but a child of God. How dare anyone get in the way of saving people's homes and saving the institutions that recklessly granted these loans? Even Barack Obama isn't pointing out the truth that even if this works, it's going to involve a lot of pain for everybody. Incredibly, he and McCain are each still talking about granting massive tax cuts. He concludes here, the federal government was running the big deficits before this latest crisis. Those deficits are about to get a lot bigger. Tax cuts make no sense, and there will be less money than ever to pay for them. Yeah, what about that $60 that some of you folks got? Of course, I didn't qualify, because I'm too rich. Yeah, anybody above $60,000 a year didn't even get the $60. But for those of you below $80,000 a year, did you really have a lot of fun with that $60? You know, most of you tried to just put a little more money on your credit cards, bills, you know, and good for you. That was the smartest thing to try to do. But did it make much difference? No, not if there's tens of thousands in debts. Not if your mortgage can't be paid because the interest rate went up. That $60 was nothing. And that cost billions of dollars. Well, another great idea from our president and his economic advisors. Tax cuts make no sense. The candidates know that the surest kiss of death for anyone running for president is to simply tell the truth. Well, I think I'm smart enough, and I guess if you've been listening this long to this show, I mean, even this day, even the last 30 seconds, you're smart enough to know that sometimes, you know, tax rebate, when everything else is going broke around you, when maybe your job will be threatened because we're out of money as a country, we're too deeply in debt, is not the right thing. Honesty. Yeah. Not gloom and doom. Like George Bush, I saw a little bit of his conference last night. That was cheery, wasn't it? So two things I'm recommending to you for, this is your research assignment, folks. One is a new book has come out in paperback. And unfortunately, the movie, since it was an independent documentary, is not going to be available as a DVD for a while, another couple weeks. The book and the movie are financed by the Peter G. Peterson Foundation, and there is some association with the Concord Coalition, and these are two groups that are very concerned about how deeply in debt we've been for the last several years, and they saw this crisis coming. They clearly saw it. They knew it was going to happen. They didn't know the exact day. And so I want to recommend the book to you, and the DVD will be out in a couple of weeks. You could put it on your request list at Netflix, of course, or tell your local video store about it, or Amazon.com will have it. They have the book now anyway, IOUSA. So it's really the United States of America owing everybody. The subtitle of the book is One Nation Under Stress in Debt. And they have a picture on the cover of the White House all boarded up, and the sign out front, they've got a for sale sign, and it says, for sale, inquire within. As if somebody's still trying to live in there. All boarded up. It was written by Addison Wiggin and Kate Incontrera. And the foreword is by David Walker, who's head of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. And he was the former United States Comptroller General. You may have seen him on the Glenn Beck Show a lot in the last 2-3 weeks as this was all coming to a head. By the way, the documentary, IOUSA, and the book that's based on it but has more in it, I highly recommend. It will get you thinking in a very clear way about the nature of the economic crisis. Even though you say, well, it's out of date. The movie was made last year, and the book, you know, based on the movie. Wait a minute. This is the core of the problem, okay, folks. Whatever they do with the bailout specifically, I'm sure the Peter G. Peterson Foundation has answers. If anybody would ask that foundation, if they'd ask David Walker to come back in, he would give them answers. And they're very close to Ron Paul's and somewhat similar to Ralph Nader's answers, but nobody's asking them. No. You don't want to ask the people who are right about what to do. No, that would be too embarrassing. Like maybe your voters in November won't reelect you because you weren't on top of things. There's an idea, folks. Anyone who was an incumbent was part of the problem for years and years and years in some cases. I know my grandmother, grandfather on my mother's side, that was their principle, which I disagreed with for a lot of years, but maybe not this November. Throw out the incumbents. They get in there for too long. They don't deserve to stay. Even if they didn't do anything wrong, you know, they get vested interest, they get fat, happy, satisfied. Everything is good for them, but maybe not for their constituents. You need people that want to make changes for the better all the time, all the time. And they're not afraid to make some big changes when needed. And boy, we need big changes, not little changes, not change for its own sake. And pocket change won't do it either. How do you like that pun? Okay, so the book is IOUSA. The movie itself was shown at the Sundance Film Festival in January and was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize. Got a lot of audience attention there. Had a very brief run at some theaters. I don't think it ever got to the Detroit area. And the DVD, as I said, is coming out in a couple of weeks. So there you go. Okay? IOUSA. The book is out now in paperback. I think I got it. It says $20 on it, but online you can probably find it for about half that. Okay. And the documentary, and by the way, and the book, they do interview Ron Paul in it, and the author of the book Empire of Debt, which also saw this coming, Bill Bonner. And Warren Buffett, too. He's a smart guy. He bought out something, didn't he, just a couple days ago for $5 billion. He had the cash. Said, whoa, I see something. It's a fire sale here. I'll take it over and be in control. Why should I let the government make a profit on this? Yeah, all the really smart rich people should be going around buying up these little banks. And, of course, some of them have no money because their own big company is belly up because they were too stupid to run it correctly. Didn't see this crisis coming, so... In any event, I highly recommend that to you. Also, if you'd like a brief summary, it's only two and a half pages long, of the current situation that's understandable for free. If you can go online to the Friends Committee on National Legislation, That is fcnl.org. Now, the Friends Committee, the American Friends Service Committee, many years ago, used to be known as the Quakers. So, they're a religious group. No, they're involved, yes, in spiritual things, but they're more in favor of keeping us from killing one another and encouraging us in every way they can to take care of one another, to help each other instead of constantly plan to hurt one another. Amazing concept. And I will say, you know, conflict of interest here, I'm a supporter of the American Friends Service Committee. And their specific committee that they had to form, they had to become a lobbyist group. So part of the service committee is in Washington, D.C., and they call themselves the Friends Committee on National Legislation. And they need, you know, to release statements and talk to congressmen and officials full-time in order to get them on the right track. I mean, rather than all these other lobbyists, they're getting them on the wrong track for years and years. So they don't have much of a budget to do it, but their website is very informative, and I get emails for free, you know, regularly from them, and you could too, fcnl.org, Friends Committee on National Legislation. Under the issues section on the federal budget, they have a statement that was just put on the website yesterday, September 25th, explaining what is this bailout plan. They point out that Senator Dodd, okay, who is head of a finance committee. He is chairman, in fact, of the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee, has made a very good proposal that they like, and they put the 6 points down here, very well stated, and how U.S. taxpayers and homeowners would be affected. You know, I've listened to these TV channels, and because it's all sound bites, 15 seconds long, you can't learn much. This is only 3 pages, folks. You know, recommend to your friends if they want to know something, they either have to read these books like IOUSA or they have to go to the website and spend more than 30 seconds looking at the top page. You're going to have to read for a while or print it out and in your leisure, find a chair, sit down, turn off all the other media and read. There was a man on Stephen Colbert's show, the satiric political show, The Colbert Report, last night, in fact, who was talking about all the new media are turning us into people that can't focus on detailed problems, even finish reading a book. You can't even read a book for more than, as he said himself, he's finding it more, reading more than 2 pages, he gets distracted. And he's a book writer. And that's because there's a society so fast-paced, so much always happening. You have to try to eliminate those distractions, folks. Set yourself up for only so many minutes of internet use a day. I know it's unsocial. Asocial? Antisocial, even. To be not part of the media mix at every single second. Well, that's not the way to be a smart person, though. If you're, you know, flowing with the current, well, as Jim Hightower says in his book title, even a dead fish can do that. Yep. And so what does the, finally, the Friends Committee on National Legislation conclude? You must take action. Let members of Congress know that you oppose a blank check for the Treasury Secretary. Send them an email. Call them up. There must be a toll-free number somewhere. Let them know you support the installation of an oversight board that's required to report to Congress on a regular basis. Affirm that you will not tolerate the Treasury Secretary acting outside the law, and if your representative votes in favor of something that doesn't have that regulation, that oversight in the bill, then you're not going to vote for him ever again for anything. I think you have to turn the screw a little bit here, folks. I'll say, could you think about that, pretty please? Oh, I'll elect you. I love you. You're right. No, this is do or die. They either do it this way and vote the right way for us, for the people, for the trickle-up people, or we don't re-elect them, either this fall or whenever they come up for the next election. Number two, again, the FCNL recommends press for a provision to limit CEO salaries. I don't know how that's going to happen, folks. Okay, I don't know how you can do that. Too many companies, if the companies want to do it, as I said, as long as they, I'd say eliminate golden parachutes. eliminate severance packages from these CEOs that are outrageous, you know. In fact, don't even let them buy stock, because all they do is sell it when they see the end coming, make a profit, and then when it goes belly up, they just retire with their profits. Yeah, their salary should be the only thing they get. And when the company goes down, or if it loses percentage, their salary goes down. Ooh, that'll scare them, huh? You know, of course, how can you stop somebody buying stock if they want to buy stock? Just don't give them a discount on it through the company itself, right? And because they're inside, they can see things coming. They can sell it a day or two before it tanks. You know, I know that's inside trading, but, you know, if you didn't get the word from anybody else, you knew it yourself. You knew what you were going to say the next day. So I don't think it's illegal for them to sell all their stock the day before it becomes public, because they didn't get, it was not insider trading. It was just something they knew in the back of their head, because they were the ones at the top. I don't know. I guess you could, I mean, you can't, you know, can't take them to court on what they knew in the back of their head, you know. So that's probably not workable. But number three, they recommend urge Congress to include a plan to help people in the United States facing foreclosure due to subprime mortgage loans. Two things I suggested. Bill, it says the banks got to go back to the original interest rate. Secondly, allow bankruptcy laws. Are you taking notes on this? Allow bankruptcy laws to include the non-payment of a mortgage, because that's a debt, that's a loan. If you can't pay it, then it should be part of a bankruptcy proceeding, which then will be mediated so that the banker can actually get a little bit of money out of it rather than nothing at all. You know. Frank Bewick, in his column, this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and this is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, September the 26th, 2008. Historic and not a good historic time for our country. Okay, I've got it here. I had to reach for the paper. You know, this is the only local news show where you can hear the pages turning on the air. That's paper turning at the end of the world here. Frank Bewick, in his 30 plus 1 column this week, talks about this too, and is similar in his feelings about where the blame should go. The blame should go at the top, our president, his economic advisors that he appointed, all the big Wall Street greedy companies. Yes, and a few people that got suckered into, you know, those adjustable rate mortgages. His idea, and I think he's just joking to show how crazy the whole situation is, Frank Bewick says, why not add another few trillion dollars to the mess and pay off all the mortgages of everyone who still owes any money? I mean, why just the mortgages people can't pay? Why not pay off all the mortgages? We'd all be living free and clear. No more mortgages to pay. Well, we'd all turn around to sell the houses, except they're worth nothing right now because nobody can borrow any money on any, because credit markets, nobody wants to give you any money. And I suspect that all the credit interest rates for mortgages will go sky high in another month or two at most, sky high, that nobody will be able to afford to get money. Even if you wanted to get rid of your house for money, which means your equity in the house is worth nothing. You know, you paid all that money, and even if the government pays off your mortgage, what are you going to do with it? Well, you can live there for a lot less money. You just have to pay taxes and upkeep, you know, electricity, natural gas. But you could live there, but you couldn't live anywhere else because you can't afford to sell it. You can't afford to buy. You know, Frank, I understand that was just a crazy idea, because the basic idea is kind of crazy, too. And as I said, we should have some sort of mediation about this to allow people to stay in those homes, to keep the interest rates at what they originally were suckered into, and at least everything would be stable and secure there, or let them go bankrupt and have it mediated so the banks will get some money out of it. Well, I know, I don't hear anybody talking about that, but again, I'm not an expert. No, my background was literature and telecommunications, but I try to read as much as I can. I read 3 books this week, and that's not much, on economics, including IOUSA. So, you know, we've got to let people know what we're thinking about, what we're doing. Now, on the front of Wednesday, September 24th, Dearborn Times Herald, they do talk about a local spin on this. Okay, City of Dearborn continues to curb efforts to curb the mortgage mess. And this is what the City of Dearborn is doing. I think it's worthy of letting you know that they're trying to do something too, even at the city level. Okay. And this is from J. Patrick Pepper at the Times Herald newspapers, as home foreclosures continue at unprecedented rates, city officials have fought to stem the devastating effects that bank-owned houses can have on a community. The Neighborhood Stabilization Program. See, the banks don't take care of those houses, folks. They might own them. They can't do anything with them. They board them up, maybe. Don't take care of the property. I mean, That's the way that goes. So there's a thing called the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, NSP. It's the multifaceted approach of city officials who have combined 2 previously existing programs with a new land bank initiative to combat blight proliferation and plummeting home values. Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. said, "The goal here is to stabilize our neighborhoods. To do so, the city has gone on a buying spree, snatching up low-cost houses from lenders who don't want the hassle of maintaining them." So I guess the city is going to maintain them anyway. Already this year, the city has purchased 18 properties under the program for an average price of $20,000 each, and currently is in negotiations for 12 more. It even has had 2 houses donated free of cost by lenders who no longer wanted the properties. Boy, they're desperate. The program was launched with a $750,000 in seed money. It's 750,000 for you numerically challenged folks out there. 750,000 in seed money granted by the city council, the Dearborn City Council itself, who says they don't have money, out of the city's general fund earlier this year, although up to $2 million was permitted. Ooh, they had even $2 million laying around. Program coordinator Nick Sirosky, a former executive with Ford Motor Land Development Corporation, said that he has committed all the initial funds, but is waiting to see if Dearborn is eligible for any money from a federal housing bill before requesting the remainder. Sirosky said the city stands to gain about $2 million out of the $3.92 billion bill in the best-case scenario. Oh, yeah, they're going to work on this other little bill while this big bailout bill is going on. Maybe they'll toss it in. I doubt it. So I think it's going to be weeks before we hear about support for this little idea, which is a good idea. Work local. Solve the problems locally. Administer them locally. Save a lot of money. You do the right thing a lot more often because you know what's going on. Well, who do you trust better, the city of Dearborn to do the right thing or the federal government? Exactly. Okay. Sirosky said the city stands to gain. Okay. But even if the city doesn't receive any money, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program will continue operations, drawing on the remaining funds approved by council. Sirosky said that he would ask the council in October to proceed one way or the other. He says, if we get the money from the housing bill, okay, we will use that as a dollar-for-dollar replacement of the money allocated by the council. If not, then we'll tap that remaining $1.25 million. While the program's focus has been to stabilize property values, an auxiliary benefit has surfaced, refreshing the city's aging housing stock. Sirosky said that currently 75% of the city's roughly 38,000 housing units are 50 years old or older. Let's see, my house was built in 1941 originally, although I did some remodeling and did an addition about 14 years ago? Anyway, so that's the older houses were built on lots measuring about 30 to 50 feet wide, and according to Sirosky, are considered small by modern building standards. By purchasing those properties, the city can combine smaller lots with neighborhood properties to create a product that appeals to today's potential home buyer. Oh, right. Today, in the current economic situation, we only want to buy big, big houses on big plots of land because we're all so rich. Well, that's really stupid. That's really a bad conclusion. It was a great conclusion maybe 5 years ago, but not anymore. Give me a break here. Show me some facts. Geez, another plus that Sarosky says the program has generated is that city ownership of the properties creates an opportunity to offer employees housing at a discounted rate. Sarosky said that currently 50% of city employees don't live in the city, with that number slightly higher for public safety workers. He said you would always like to have your employees live in the city. It definitely makes people feel a little safer when they live next door to a police or a fireman. Well, that's an interesting proposal. Also, by the way, though, when you can combine parcels of land, and let me say this to make up for what I said about the idea of only bigger homes on bigger plots of land for the rich people, is that you can consider other forms of housing, like condominiums and so-called townhouses. You can get a lot more people living in a smaller area, and it's more energy efficient, folks, and it should be more cost effective, although in some areas condos cost as much or more than a house, a separate house. So whatever, I'm glad people are working on this locally. I trust the city of Dearborn, again, to do the right thing and to make changes as needed to these programs, a lot more than state or federal, and it's only logical why. So good to have that program. Good to see that. Only about 10 minutes more before Big Band, the Big Blues Show with Joanne Korchinska comes on, a four-hour cruise down Highway 61, as she calls it, the Big Blues Highway in Mississippi. And that's going to begin in just 10 minutes. So stay tuned for that if you're listening to our show live today. Really unfortunate here. Dearborn Police, along with Allen Park Police, are named in a $20 million assault suit. The lawsuit claims that 59-year-old Ernest Griglin suffered a permanent brain injury after he was mistaken for a drunken driver on June 15th by Allen Park and Dearborn police officers. In actuality, Griglin, a diabetic, was suffering from the effects of extremely low blood sugar. And so they apparently beat him up. And, of course, the city has said it would be irresponsible for the city to comment on this. According to the report, however, and this is continued on page 4, I'm looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide right now, just in case you're interested, we normally don't do these things. Oh, yeah, continuing on page 4. And, of course, it's not on page 4. That's... Oh, duh. 8-8. Okay, let's read the number right. 4 does not look like an 8. Okay, here we go. Okay, the man was stopped at a green light in the middle lane of M39, Southfield Road to south of Pinecrest, whatever that is. The Detroit resident indicated he had gotten into a verbal argument with his wife sometime prior to the incident. Allen Park police officer Tracy Brown reported that she attempted to tell Griglin to pull over to the side of the road. However, the Detroit resident continued driving about 40 miles per hour and swerved over the center line twice. It was apparent the driver didn't have adequate control over his vehicle, Brown said in her report. The driver finally pulled over on Southfield just south of the Ford Road exit, at which time he slowly exited the vehicle and walked to the front of the Cadillac where he placed his hands on the hood. I asked him why he wasn't stopping for me, and he wouldn't answer me. She then advised the Detroit resident to place his hands behind his back as he was being arrested for fleeing and eluding. Griglin allegedly refused to do so and became combative. When he observed Dearborn police officers arrive at the scene, Griglin attempted to flee. And Brown said, I grabbed him the back of his shirt to stop him. And then Griglin had to be wrestled to the ground by the officers. The report indicates that Griglin was very combative and would not comply with officers' demands to cooperate with attempts to handcuff him. Because he was combative and kept reaching for a black object on his waistband, which was ultimately identified as a diabetic's insulin pump. Gee, I didn't know an insulin pump could be taken as a weapon. Oh, my God. So they sprayed Griglin with a Freeze Plus, a mixture of pepper spray and tear gas, and were able to handcuff him. According to a Dearborn police report, officers also struck Griglin as part of their efforts to subdue him. Officers were finally able to get a hold of Griglin's hands, according to the report, and he was handcuffed. As officers assisted the Detroit resident to a standing position, his shirt moved up off his waist, and Brown said that's when she noticed he had an insulin pump attached to the side of his body. I observed Griglin, she said, had a bloody nose and bump on his forehead from where he hit the cement after being wrestled to the ground. They tested him for alcohol. Results were negative. No illegal drug use. No drugs in the car. So where would you come down on that, folks? $20 million to the family? How were they to know that he was diabetic? You know, it's always interesting. If you just go by the headlines, you say, oh, the police, they're not doing their job. If you read the police side of it, they really didn't know. They were a combative person, didn't follow their orders. I mean, he had a good excuse, but that doesn't mean the police knew what that was until he had already been hit his head on the cement or been beaten, trying to stop him or whatever. So anyway. He remains unresponsive, so our sympathies certainly go out to his family. And let the courts do what they need to do here, I guess. Alrighty. Hope to see you folks out at the New Place Lounge. It's time for a little promotional announcement, as they say, for WHFR. And if you're listening to this after Saturday the 27th, after Saturday, it already took place. But we have a fall benefit concert. We've had necessity to work on our transmitter, which cooling system blew up, and we had to do more rewiring. We had to bring in power supplies. We've had so many power failures here at the college. We've had to buy a $600 battery backup power supply to keep us on the air, even for just 30 minutes, because there's so many little power outages here for a minute or 10 minutes at a time that this will sure help us out. So, it's not a pledge drive time, folks. That's always in the spring. We only do that once a year. But we've got three great blues bands who are playing for free for us. Full sets at the New Place Lounge tomorrow night, Saturday, September 27th. That's 22723 Michigan Avenue in Dearborn, or West Dearborn. It's on the south side of Michigan Avenue before you get to Outer Drive, and it's past Michigan and Military. It's probably closer to Michigan and Military. So if you're driving west from Southfield Expressway, passing Military, look for it on the left. It's right close to Michigan Avenue, and it's sort of on the edge of a big parking lot for a shopping center that's further back away from Michigan Avenue there. And you can park anywhere around there, free parking. And it's a great, safe area in West Dearborn. And Christy and Jeff Howard, they'll be performing, as well as the Front Street Blues Band and Paul Miles Band, too. And that's just going to be a great evening. Music will start probably 9:30-ish, and go until, as most bars usually do, until about 1:30 in the morning for the last set. Maybe party all the way to 2. So whatever time, we got a lot of people telling me, oh, I can't make it for 9 or 10. I can get there 11 or 12. We'll still be at it. And we're asking for a $5 donation per person at the door to benefit us, WHFR-FM, an independent, non-commercial radio station. And as it says here on the flyer, with unique radio programming and information since 1985, which I can validate since I've been here since then, too. And I expect to be out there one place or the other. I'm not a big party person. I hardly drink at all. But these bands are great. And, you know, I sit in and help Joanne Kurtinska produce her show most Fridays, most of the time, unless there's other things that need my help around here in the station. And so I've heard these people. I've met these people. I can tell you, even if you haven't listened to them before, it's going to be a great time. So here's some, we're going to conclude the hour, some public service announcements, and then go right into the Highway 61 theme. Thank you for listening to us today. Go out and let your elected representatives in Washington, D.C., John Dingell, John Conyers in this area, Sandra Levin, Debbie Stabenow, let them know what you want them to do in terms of this bailout. Maybe some suggestions I made, or fcnl.org, or Ralph Nader at votenader.org. Ron Paul has a number of websites suggest they get involved with these people that know what they're doing, or the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. Listen to the people that saw this coming and had suggestions before. They weren't just doomsayers. They were people that had answers. And they still do. So ask the people that have answers to get those answers put into play right now, at least temporarily. Thank you for listening today. Stay tuned to Highway 61 and WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
WHFR is having a blues concert to benefit our station on Saturday night, September 27th, and we hope that you will be there. The New Place Lounge on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn will be the place to hear live blues music featuring Christy and Jeff Howard. The Paul Miles Band.
I like the way you walk. Babe, I like the way you talk. Don't you know you got this man singing? Ooh, la, la, la.
And the Front Street Blues Band. Only a $5 donation at the door gets you in, and food and beverages will be available for purchase. 21 and over, please. That's Saturday, September 27th, starting at 9 p.m. at the New Place Lounge on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. Please join us for some great blues music and support WHFR, making waves since 1985.
Are you an HFCC college student that likes to dance? Auditions will be held for the Henry Ford Community College Full Circle Dance Company on Thursday, October 2nd from 4:30 until 6 p.m. and Friday, October 3rd from 3 until 4:30 p.m. in the dance studio. The dance studio is located in the lower level of the Athletic Memorial Building on HFCC's campus. This will also serve as an audition for a dance scholarship. Male and female students with a strong dance background are being sought for performance opportunities both on and off campus in the winter 2009 semester. For further information, please contact Diane Mancinelli at 313-845-6314 or DMANCIN at hfcc.edu.
Team HFCC is an organization that includes students, staff, faculty, alumni, and friends who support the American Cancer Society, and they encourage you to attend the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer Walk. Making Strides Against Breast Cancer is a great way to fight back against breast cancer and provide hope to all people facing the disease. You can register online at www.makingstrides@ascevents.org. Find the Team HFCC area and fill in the necessary information. The Making Strides Against Breast Cancer Walk is Saturday, October 18th, 2019.